Hi, my name is Charlotte. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, Patrick, for asking me to come and do this. I always start by saying I really don't want to do this. I don't really want to do most things I do in AA or sobriety or recovery. But I find that, doing these things has a positive impact on my life. And so I remember this old timer when I was, bitching and moaning about doing some service work at a spring roundup in San Diego at 9 a.m. I was really complaining a lot, and he, finally slammed his hand on the table and said, "Little girl, you don't have to like it, you just have to do it." And it gave me permission to like I was so relieved. It gave me permission to not like this stuff and do it anyway. And so that's what I've been doing ever since. So I don't like speaking in meetings, but I'm going to do it anyway. My sobriety date is March 6th of 1995. So I just passed my 30 years a couple weeks ago. And if you had asked me when I got here, would you want to stay sober for 30 years? I would have said no way. I didn't even want to be here for 30 minutes, But a little bit about my background and how I got here, 30 years later is that my So I live in California. I was born and raised in California. But my childhood was pretty chaotic. I had a lot of, abuse in my life. I had a lot of trauma. My mom is mentally ill and liked to get married a lot. But my grandma, her mom, was married 9 times. So it's like she had, she learned from her. And my grandma was an alcoholic, narcissist, and my mom was not an alcoholic, but she had a lot of other addictions, including gambling and shopping, and she was a hoarder. So anyway, my childhood was full of a lot of chaos, and I ended up living with different relatives at various times. I remember having this conversation with my mom once. We had a very on and off relationship, and she came to visit me after our daughter was born, maybe a year later. And she said something about the fact that, well, I had to think about you kids. And I kind of like snickered a little, like I kind of chuckled. And she's like, "What was that chuckle about?" And I go, "Mom, you showed up. I was living with Nana, and you showed up at her house one day, and you with a man and 2 kids and my brother. Well, my brother lived with me in my grandma's house, but she showed up with this man and these other 2 kids and said, 'Get in the car. We're going to Reno. This is your new dad and your new siblings.'" And I said, "I had never met him before." And she said, "That is not true. You had dinner with him the night before." And I was like, "Well, that changes everything." You know what I mean? Like, oh, mother of the year. Sorry, I was so mistaken. So that's kind of how my life was. Like, it was just I never knew what to expect in my family. My dad was really abusive, which is why my mom. Well, actually, I think they're both abusive. My dad was physically abusive. My mom was an emotionally abusive person, and they split up. And I lived with my grandma for a couple of years, and then my mom remarried this guy that she showed up with, and he was verbally abusive and occasionally physically abusive, but only with me. Like the rest of my siblings were treated like they could do no wrong, and I was for sure the scapegoat in my family. My brother is very, very religious, and he doesn't really acknowledge a lot of mental disease or defect, as the book says. And he was like, oh no, you for sure were the scapegoat. I was punished severely and regularly, and I was grounded most of my childhood when my siblings were able to go out and do stuff, and then my parents got divorced again. Actually, first of all, we lived in LA. We moved around a lot, actually. But at one point we were living in LA, and we were in this neighborhood that's really, really wealthy, and we were not really, really wealthy. We were living in a condo. I don't know if anybody's seen The Slums of Beverly Hills, but it was kind of like that movie. Like, we were the poor rich people, we were middle class, in other words. And at one point I told my mom that I didn't have very many friends, and I told my mom that my one friend's parents were being mean to me, because I didn't really know how to say that they were molesting me, her mom and her dad. I didn't know how to say that, because back in the early 80s, that wasn't really a term that I was familiar with. And my mom was like, well, just don't go over there anymore, And she was my only friend. So I was like, there's no way I'm not gonna go over there. Like, I didn't have, my parents both worked and went to school, so I was a total latchkey kid. I was extremely lonely. I was being bullied severely at school. This is my one friend, So I like chose to go to her house, even though I was being molested by her parents, which tells you how lonely I was. And anyway, so my mom was just kind of clueless. And then we moved again. We moved a bunch. And I felt like I was always the new kid, but I was also the weird kid, because I had such bad anxiety and I had panic attacks all the time. And again, nobody was like, hey, you seem anxious, or that this is a panic attack. I'm so grateful that people have evolved in their understanding of brain science, because all what I needed was somebody to help me, and what I was getting was people telling me, like, stop crying or I'll give you something to cry about, So I grew up with this like fear of my own emotions, because and I had a lot of them because of my trauma. So it was just this like conflict inside of me. And we ended up moving up to the Central Coast, which is where I live now, of California, which is like halfway between San Francisco and LA. And this is where I went to high school and where I started drinking. I have to tell you, when I moved back here, it was very weird, because I remember driving past a house and I was like, oh, that's the house that we that was there was a house that was for sale that we broke into, and we squatted there for like 3 days and just drank and drank and drank. It was like Friday, Saturday, Sunday, And this poor person's like vacant house. And then I'm like, oh, that's the house that I threw up in the sink because someone else was throwing up in the bath in the toilet. Like, there's just like all these places where I drive around and I'm reminded of my drinking and my using. We moved here and I was still extremely anxious. I started drinking. I started getting into a crowd of people who drank, the surf community. I was a surfer back then, and started drinking a lot. I was introduced to alcohol at a party in high school. I think I was in ninth grade or the summer between eighth and ninth. I don't remember, but it was such a relief. It was just like, oh my God. I had a break from feeling my feelings, and I really credit alcohol with saving my life for a long time. It really did save my life. And I was, suicidal, a lot in my youth. I actually was suicidal when I was about 10, and I didn't even know that people killed themselves back then. Like, I just knew that I wanted to die. And I would tell people, even from a young age, from like age 5, I would tell people that I was a bad seed. So somebody must have told me that I was a bad seed because I repeated that all the time. And so I was very, I was suicidal. I didn't understand how to navigate life. So I started drinking and it was on, you know. Pretty quickly my drinking became a big problem. Well, I had some problems with my drinking. Drinking was my solution. It wasn't a problem, but I had problems because I had consequences, I guess you could say. And one of the consequences was that I was sexually assaulted multiple times, three times actually, when I was drunk. And, you know, when I wrote my four step, it's like you really don't. I know that there's like, as a person who has been victimized, you know, I don't have a part in that, I didn't ask for that. I didn't deserve it, even if I was drunk. But I do have a part with what I did with that after, which is that I blamed myself. I didn't get help. I didn't, well, actually, I tried to talk to somebody who, oh my God, I told this girl, I told my friend, my best friend, right after it happened the first time, that I think I was just raped. And she was like, "Well, did he get off?" And I said, "No, he said that I was screaming and crying too much and I ruined it for him." And she goes, "Well, then it's not rape." And so I went through thinking that I hadn't been assaulted when I had been. And the guy actually told me the next day that I said, "What happened last night?" And he said, "As far as you're concerned, nothing happened. And if you tell anybody, no one's going to believe you anyway because I'm popular and you're not," which was actually true. I don't think anybody would have believed me. And this is, you know, early to mid 80s. So rape culture was not a thing back then. It wasn't, there was nothing at our school about it, about how to prevent it or anything. But honestly, that first time, it completely propelled me into drinking, like really, like alcoholically. That was like the moment. Actually, two things happened. So right around that time I was first assaulted, I got into a really bad car accident as a passenger, and I went through a windshield sideways with no seatbelt on, sitting on someone's lap. And so I got injured and I had to quit. I was on swim team and I was a surfer, and those were the things that I really enjoyed doing. It was actually like I used to swim like 3 to 5 miles a day. Like I was like really into swimming, and I couldn't swim or surf anymore. So like the two things that were my positive outlets were just overnight were taken away from me because I couldn't move my shoulder or my neck. And then I was also assaulted at the same time. So for me, it was like my whole world turned upside down. And then my parents got divorced that same year. There was a lot of tumultuous stuff going on. And what happened was I just threw myself into alcohol. And I used to drive around with a case of Cuervo in my car at 16 that my cousin stole. He worked at a liquor store, and he gifted me with this case of Cuervo because he knew I liked tequila. Which, you know, I didn't know any other 16-year-old girls who were doing that. And it's not like I was sharing it. I would show up at a party and I would drink a half pint and then I would go into the party. I always had to pre-drink no matter what because I had such bad social anxiety. So I would drink before I drank. And anytime I went to a party, I would have to have a couple beers or a couple shots or a couple hits off. I had a bong that I kept under my seat, a water bong that I kept under my seat in my car. And around that time too, you know, I was kind of like, I was in this crowd of people who were like the outcasts, the misfits. I was punk rock and goth or whatever. We called them death rockers back then. But so there weren't that many of us there. But I got We had a we live in a surf town, you know what I mean? Our high school is the only high school in the United States with direct access to the beach, and we had a surf club and stuff, so there's no fence or anything, you know. It's very surfy here. And what was I gonna say about that? Around that time, I ended up driving down to San Diego with some friends. I don't know why my mom let me go on this trip. Oh, she had just gotten divorced and she didn't give a fuck, right? She was just like, she went from being like super, super strict to like grounding me if I left a spoon on the counter for, she would ground me for like 2 weeks for that, to like not giving a shit. So it's just crazy how at the age when I needed the most structure, she just was like off the rails, So I went to San Diego with some friends and ended up trying to kill myself in a blackout down there. And that was the trip. I mean, I look back on that, I'm like so lucky that I didn't get murdered, because I was walking around San Diego. I think I was 15 and I was walking around. I was soaking wet because I had decided to take a swim in the ocean. I had lost my shoes. I was barefoot. I was sandy. It was 3 in the morning. I wasn't in a good part of town. Like, I lived in San Diego for like 15 years and I was not in a good part of town. The fact that I didn't get picked up and murdered is a miracle. But anyway, I was in high school, and I always tell this story because it's so funny to me, but someone elected me to be one of the homecoming queen candidates, and the school de-elected me. They denominated me because they determined that I was a bad influence. They were like, she could not be in the homecoming queen court. Like, there's no way. I also hold the title of being the first girl at my junior high to ever be suspended, and that was because I flipped off my teacher. He was a dick. He deserved it. But in 8th grade, I was the first kid who the first female ever. The principal didn't even know what to do. He was just like, I've never had this conversation with a girl before. Like, you're the first girl who's ever been suspended. I started getting bullied. So I was bullied in junior high really bad. And then when I moved again, it was better for like 2 years. And then I had this bully who was so horrific. The bullying that I endured was so horrific that I ended up getting a restraining order against this girl. It was constant, like constant. And she was a big girl, she would push me into the lockers at school. She would I've always had long hair, and she would grab me by my hair. She tried to burn my eye out with a cigarette one time. She was constantly chasing me down, hitting me, like yelling at me, just like super abusive. She slashed my mom's tires a number of times. We had to have her phone changed, her phone number changed probably 7 times in 1 year. I mean, it was like harassment to the nth degree. And that really did affect me too. I just felt like I couldn't get a break. And I hated myself already so much, but alcohol was there to ease that pain, to like numb me. And so many times I've heard people in AA say that when they drank, they felt more popular and more sociable and funnier and friendlier. And like, I didn't feel anything, and that's exactly what I wanted. I didn't even know that there wasn't such a thing as people who didn't have blackouts. Like, I thought blackouts were the whole point of drinking. Like, that was a good day if I blacked out. So when I came to AA, was the first time I heard that people were like, oh yeah, I used to have blackouts. And I was like, doesn't everyone? I mean, isn't that the point? So I was so surprised. But that's the kind of people I drank with too. I partied with some with a lot of, I partied with a lot of drinkers. There was not a lot to do here. I remember having a contest with the quarterback of the football team who I didn't like. I challenged him to see who could slam more beers and not throw up and still be standing. And I won. Like, I had almost a case of beer. Like, I'm so little, like I'm 5'2", 5'3", and I could drink so much more than you would think I could because I had built up my tolerance so much.
I also used to smoke an excessive amount of pot just so I wouldn't throw up because, you know, let's encourage the alcohol poisoning as much as possible. Anyway, so after high school, I barely graduated. In that I was getting into trouble a lot and skipping school and stuff, but I graduated and then I got in, I moved. Actually, I got into some trouble with the law, which I'm not going to go into because this is being recorded and my daughter might find it some years down the road. But I'm just going to say I got into some trouble with the law because of my drinking and using. And I was facing prison time, probably 5 to 10 years. And right before this happened, my mom had remarried. It's actually like right when I turned 18, she remarried a juvenile defense attorney, which was like the only decision she ever made in my life that helped me. So she married this guy, and he was like, "I have connections. Let me make some calls." And, you know, I mean, I'm very grateful that he, you know, he was a judge also, and he knew people, and he basically did like a plea agreement so that I wouldn't have a record. I'm super grateful for that. And also, you know, I think they probably let me off a little too easily. Like I was able to get, you know, I scraped, I had so many scrapes. I would get pulled over by the cops with and you know, an open beer between my legs when I was driving, and I would drive with an Afghan blanket on me, like on my lap, and I would just tell the cops would be like, "What's with the blanket?" "Oh, my heater's broken." And they'd be like, "Okay, you know, can you please slow down?" And they would let me go, you know. There was a lot of stuff like that where I just had all these near misses, and I used to drive drunk pretty regularly, so the fact that I didn't get pulled over was crazy. You know, when you drive with one hand over over one eye just so you can see straight. Anyway, so I moved to LA, or I moved to Palm Springs, and then I moved to LA, and then I moved to San Diego and back to Palm Springs. There was a lot of geographics that I pulled in my you know, after high school, between high school and when I got sober. And what ended up happening was I moved to LA. And I was working at a department store called Bullock's, for those of you old enough to remember Bullock's, which got bought by Macy's. And I had this coworker that saw how I drank. And this is like, I'm now, you know, I'm now drinking almost daily. And I used to drink at lunchtime on my break. I would go to the food court and get loaded. And so she knew how I drank too because she saw me on the weekends. I used to like hang out with her, and she was concerned about my drinking and was in AA. And she was like, "Hey, I just wanted you to know that." Oh, she saw me have this breakup with this guy that I had dated for like 5 minutes. And she was like, "Hey, I just want you to know there's hot guys in AA at the Hermosa Beach Alano Club if you want to go with me." And I was like, "When's the next meeting?" Like, I was totally like, "I'm game. Like, what time is it? You know, let's go." Because I had been without a boyfriend for like 10 minutes, you know? And I was very just desperate to be loved, and accepted. And so I was just seeking this out in all the wrong ways, you know? So I did go to a meeting with her, and I thought, what in the cult am I doing here? Like, this is some crazy shit. They're chanting, you know, when they did the readings, they were I just remember looking around and being like, this is a bona fide cult. Like, but hey, that guy's cute, so whatever. If this is the cult, take me to the compound because I need a boyfriend. So I got a boyfriend that night, and which is super funny. Oh, somebody needs to get rid of this guy that just joined. Thank you. So I just thought that was hilarious. And I also didn't like the fact that they held hands and prayed at the end. I thought that was really weird. And so anyway, I started dating this guy in AA, and I at the time I was kind of technically homeless because I had been living with this my coworker, not the coworker who tried to get me sober, but a different coworker who was a friend of mine from junior high, and her dad started hitting on me, and I was like, I can't do this, you know? And so I moved out. But I moved, I didn't really have a place to live. So I started house sitting for rich people, which if you're ever homeless, let me tell you what, house sitting for people in Palos Verdes is pretty rad. I mean, they have a lot of booze and a lot of cool art and books and stuff. And some good food too. I mean, I was not shy about raiding people's cabinets, but I ended up, I went from one house to another because I didn't really have a place to live, and I ended up down in San Diego. I couch surfed my way down to San Diego, and when I ended up there, I started a job at a detox doctor's office as a receptionist. And at that point, my drinking was daily, but I had decided that my problem was hard alcohol. I couldn't do liquor anymore. I would get so sick, or I would just have these bad nights that and I the blackouts and stuff, like when I'd God, I remember waking up. I remember calling my roommate from this house in San Diego. I had gone on this what was supposed to be a date, but we actually just went back to his house and drank. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know what part of town I was in. I didn't know if this guy's name was really what he said, because I called my roommate to get a ride because I had to go to work. I remember calling her, and she was like, "Where are you?" It was like 4 in the morning because I had to be at work at like 7. I was still up, still drunk. He was passed out. And I called her and I was like, I don't know. She's like, well, I can't come get you unless I know where you are. I had to dig through this guy's mail to figure out what address, like, and she had to look on the map. We had those like big map books, those Thomas guides. She had to look on the map on the wall to figure out what part of town I was in. Like, it was bananas, just like shit like that. I just can't even. And she came and got me. And the guy's name was not on any of the mail, by the way. P.S. So, like, I could have been murdered, Like, I just did stuff all the time that was like, I didn't care if I lived or died, I got in cars with people that I shouldn't be in cars with. I had so many just like scrapes. And anyway, so I'm living in San Diego, and I was working for this doctor, and I would see these patients come in who were drinking a lot, like way more than I was. I remember this guy, Robert, who used to come in. He was an older man in his 70s, and he was drinking a gallon of vodka a day as a maintenance, and he would stand and talk to me like I'm talking to you right now. You couldn't even tell. And so I just kept thinking, well, I'm not that bad. Like, I'm nowhere near like as bad as this guy. So it actually made me question my drinking. And because I had stopped drinking hard alcohol at that point and was only drinking beer and wine, I was drinking a lot of beer and wine. But I didn't think that I had a problem anymore, or I didn't think that my drinking was problematic, is what I should say. I still felt like it was my solution. But anyway, I also at that time was living with the roommate that I had called to come pick me up. She was psychotic. Like, she was not medicated and was psychotic. And, her boyfriend, like, had held a knife to my throat one night when we were watching The Simpsons. I mean, just like crazy shit would happen. And she told me, I can't live with you anymore because you're too crazy. And I was like, come again? Like, what? This is not how this conversation is supposed to go. Like, this is supposed to be the other way around. Like, the craziest person I know is calling me crazy. But she did say, like, I think you need help with your anger. And because you keep breaking my shit. And I was like, well, okay, fine. So I started going to, she told me about ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics, and I started going to ACA meetings, and I really identified a lot, and I got a sponsor there, and she was like super religious, which really bothered me. She read to me from the Bible and stuff. Oh my God, I can't even believe I had to endure that. But she told me that she thought that I had a drinking problem, and I told her drinking is not a problem, it's my solution. And she said, well, why don't you try to have one drink a day? And if you skip a day, you can't have two the next day. Like, you have to only limit to one a drink a day. And I was super offended by that suggestion because I was like, that is a complete waste of alcohol. One drink will do nothing for me. There is no way I'm going to waste alcohol like that. Like, I was so offended at the suggestion that I was like, I will just not drink altogether, and I'll prove to you that I don't have a problem, that it's fine. I'm fine. And so I always say I got sober out of spite. I did most things out of spite, though, let's be honest. So I did that. So on March 6th of 95, I took a fat Sharpie and I crossed through that day on my calendar. I was like, okay, day one, things are good. I'm doing it. And then by the end of day, I think it was like 19 or something. 18, I don't remember, it was a couple weeks. I became agoraphobic and I couldn't leave my house. And I was having such severe panic attacks that if I walked toward my door, I had a mailbox just on the outside of my door. If I walked to go get my mail, my knees would buckle under me. It was like my body was possessed. That's what it felt like. And I couldn't go to work. I called my boss and I asked him, I told him, like, something is wrong with me. I need you to call the paddy wagon. And he was like, well, what's going on? And I said, I don't know, but I can't even open my front door. Like, my knees buckle. And he goes, yeah, that's called panic disorder. And he said, would this have anything to do with the fact that you quit drinking a couple weeks ago? And I was like, well, how the hell do you know that? Like, what? And he said, you've been detoxed. I'm a detox doctor. For fuck's sake, you've been detoxing at my front desk for a couple of weeks. Like, you don't think I know the signs? And I was like, it has nothing to do with my stopping drinking. So no, the answer's no. And he goes, oh, okay. So he's like, I'm gonna call one of my colleagues. He's gonna come out. He's a psychologist. He's gonna come visit you at your house, and he'll put you on some non-narcotic, non-addictive medication to help you with your anxiety. So he did. This guy came to my house and put me on, Zoloft. And this is not a plug for Zoloft, by the way. It gave me like a really crazy sleep disorder, but that's another story. And so I was able to get out, leave my house when I had like, I think it was, I probably had like a month and a half dry or something. I had taken some leave off work, and then I left the house, but oh my God, I was so pissed. I was just angry all the time, I was on the verge of losing my job regularly. And my sponsor in ACA was like, hey, I don't think I ever told you this, but I've been in AA for like 25 years, and I think you might want to go to a meeting. And I was like, oh, hell no. This chanting motherfucker is like, oh my God, to that cult. Like, are you crazy? And then I remembered, oh, there were cute guys in the Hermosa Beach Gelato Club. And I don't have a boyfriend right now. That guy broke up with me. And so, oh, actually, I was dating a few of the patients that would come into my work. I was like, going to the charts, like, which heroin addict do I want to? Oh, this guy looks good, anyway, oh my God, what a shit show. So, let's see. So she told me she was sober. And right about that same time, my boss came to me and was like, look, you're so angry. You're on the verge of losing your job. I really like you, but you are not okay. Like, you cannot tell patients. Patients would call and they would say, "Hey, do you have an appointment? Do you have an appointment today?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, we have one at 1 o'clock or 3 o'clock." And they'd be like, "Well, that doesn't work for me." And I'd be like, "Call me back when it works for you." And I'd hang up on them, like, "You must not be sick then." Like, hang up on them, like, "This is not your schedule that we're dealing with. You are working around the doctor." Like, I was just an asshole. So my boss came and told me, he sat me down and was like, "You're on your final write-up. Like, you can't talk to people like this." And I was like, "I hate people." He's like, "Well, it's obvious you hate people. And I think, you had stopped drinking, and I think you have some issues, and you might want to go to AA." And I go, "What?" And he said, "I'm going to tell you this. I don't tell people this often, but I've been in AA for 35 years." And I was like, "What? I thought you, I'm like, you guys are doing open enrollment or something, because you're like the third person from AA who's tried to get me to go. Like, I thought you guys like maybe got a finder's fee or something, like a referral bonus. I don't know. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't trust it." But then when my sponsor had said this thing about AA, I was like, "Oh, I could probably get a boyfriend there, you know?" So I went to a meeting, which was horrible, by the way. I mean, thank God I was desperate for a boyfriend, because I went to another meeting. I almost got into a fist fight at that second meeting. I mean, I was so angry. And somebody was like, "You should go to Young People's." I was 23, and I was like, going to these meetings with a bunch of old people and some people around my age, but mostly older people. And this one person was like, "You should go to Young People's." And I was like, "What's Young People's?" And they said, "Oh, there's people your age." And I was like, "Okay, boyfriend material." So I went to Young People's, and even the sickest guys were like, "No, thank you. Like, I'm good. You can stay over there." I was just rageful. And I remember when I got my 4-year chip, this biker guy, he was like on a Harley, and he was a total biker guy. He had the leather vest and the freaking patches and stuff, and he was huge, and he had this big beard. And he came up to me and he said, "I just want you to know, I'm so glad that you stayed, because you're less angry than you were when you came in." He's like, "When you came in, I was scared of you. Like, I legit thought if I said the wrong thing, you would slash the tires on my Harley." Like, he was just like, "I feared for my life when I was around you. Like, you were scary." And I was like, "Yes, I was scary." And I was so unhinged that no one wanted to sponsor me. That sponsor in ACA, by the way, she wanted me to do a bunch of stuff out of the Bible, and I wasn't cool with that. And so I told her to kick rocks or something, or maybe she told me to kick rocks, probably more likely. And so I was trying to get a sponsor in AA, and nobody would sponsor me. And I was going to meetings. I call it the time of my sobriety instead of sobriety, because I was so dry. I was like dry as a cracker. And I would go to these meetings and I was really angry, and I would ask people to sponsor me, and they'd be like, "No, I can't sponsor you." They wouldn't be like, "Oh, I can't sponsor you, but maybe this person can," or, "I can't sponsor you because I have too many sponsors, but I'll give you my number." Like, nobody was like, people did not want me to call them. And so finally, this woman from New York, Laura, she told her sponsee, she assigned her to be my sponsor. She was like, "You need to sponsor that girl, or she's gonna die. Like, you gotta go sponsor her." And her sponsee, Laura's sponsee, Kristen, was a hippie. Okay. I am here. I'm wearing like a leather jacket, like 12 hole Docs. I'm like punk rock. And this fucking hippie comes up to me and says, "If you want what I have, call me." And I started laughing. I was like, and I said, "I don't want what you have." Like, I mean, straight up, she was, following the Grateful Dead around at the time, because Jerry Garcia was still alive. And I did not want what she had. I did not want any part of that. But so I ripped up her number. And then a couple weeks later, I was going from one meeting to another, and I was in a lot of pain, and I stopped at a liquor store, and I sat outside this liquor store, and I was like, I just want to not feel like this for 2 minutes, 3 minutes. I just wanted relief so bad of how I was feeling. I was so sick of being so angry and so filled with hate for everybody and for myself. And, at that point, I was just bare knuck, white knuckling, just to get through. And I sat outside that liquor store and I thought, I'm willing to give up 11 months of what I considered sobriety at the time. I don't consider it sobriety now, but sobriety, I'm willing to give up 11 months just to feel different or feel relief for a few minutes. And that's when I thought, maybe I do have a problem because that's probably not normal. And so I went home instead of going to the second meeting. And I remember I had a rotary phone and I had a phone list, and I picked up the phone and I started calling women on this phone list. I often joke, I'm sure it's not true, but I imagine that what happened, because we didn't have caller ID back then and we didn't have cell phones, so there's no way to know who's calling you. I imagine that the phone rang on the other end with the Jaws theme. Like people are like, oh, don't pick that up. It's probably Charlotte. Like it's a d danger. There's like a red light flashing in their phone or something. People were not picking up. I was definitely not going to leave messages. And I got to the J's. So I had called all the A's, B's, and C's, all the way down to the J's. And this woman, Jody, picked up the phone. She was so awesome. And she said, wasn't Kristen assigned to be your sponsor? And I was like, I mean, I guess so. And she's like, you should call her. She'd be a good sponsor for you. And I said, I don't think she will be. And she's like, no, I think she'll be a good sponsor for you. And I really liked Jody. She was so kind, and I, for some reason, believed her. And I remember hanging up the phone, and Kristen was the next number on the list because it went J to K, right? So Kristen's number was right there. And I sat there for like 10 minutes, like, holy shit, is this my bottom right now? Am I going to call a hippie for help? This is my bottom. Like, I am going to literally pick up this fucking phone and call somebody who wears patchouli and has dreads. It was painful. I remember the rotary, like it was just felt like, ugh. And I called Kristen, and her mom answered. She lived with her parents. She lived with her mom, and her mom and her sister. I called really late at night too, and she answered the phone, and she said, meet me at this meeting tomorrow." And I was like, "Okay." And I met her at this meeting, and man, she became my sponsor somehow. I didn't want her to be my sponsor, but no one else would sponsor me. So she sponsored me. I was barely willing to do what she said. She was like, I want you to call me every day for 2 weeks. And I was like, I don't even call my boyfriend every day. Like, no way. And I was dating a guy who was technically still married in the program. His wife was not happy about that. That was the meeting that I went to right before I went to the liquor store. Was this meeting where his wife got up and talked about the shitty, I think she said the shitty hoe that is dating my husband. And I was in the front row of that meeting and I was like, I think she's talking about me. Shit. Anyway, I started doing what Kristen suggested. She put me on a man van. She had me answering phones at central office between 1 and 4 in the morning, like at the office. She had me going to juvenile hall and taking meetings in there. She worked the steps with me, and she worked the traditions with me because she said I was breaking traditions right and left in the meetings, and so she wanted me to understand what not to do. She was such a hard ass hippie, man. But she got me into the book and into service, and those were really helpful. I really don't like the big book at all, but I love the 12 and 12. A lot of the stuff in the 12 and 12 is stuff that I relate to. And especially there's a page that talks about struggling to the top of the heap or hiding underneath it, and that we can't, our egomania digs two disastrous pitfalls, and like we're d like depend on people far too much, or we dominate them. And I was like, that's me. That's the first time I identified with something in the book. And she told me that I could choose whatever higher power worked for me, because I told her I was, atheist, and she was like, well, choose whatever higher power works for you. So I chose Boba Fett from Star Wars as my first higher power, thinking that it would probably get me kicked out of AA, and I was so critical of people who would get up and talk about Jesus as their higher power. And then my sponsor was like, so let me just remind you, like, you think Jesus is, fictional, and you have a problem with people having Jesus as their higher power, but you have fucking Boba Fett, who we know is fictional. Like, there is proof of that, and he dies in one of the movies. Anyway, so I started being more open to, like, whatever works for you, do it. And she took me through the steps. I had a really long four step. I kept every resentment I ever had, like, tiny resentments. I held on to them like jewels, just to prove what a victim I was. And I would, I had, like, someone on my four step that was like guy at the Arco station in 91 who stole my pump. Like, this guy, like, cut in front of me in line at the gas station. I put that on my four step. Like, I had every wrong that anybody ever did to me in my life. This four step was like fucking War and Peace. It was so huge and so long. But they said nothing counts but thoroughness and honesty. And I really took the thorough to another level, but I put them all down, and my sponsor would go, she went through it with me. It took like 24 hours, literally 3 8-hour meetings to go through my four step. And she had me see my part. I was like, oh, I'm pissed at this girl because she talked shit about me in high school and I never did anything to her. And I was like, I don't know what my part is because I was victimized. Like, I didn't do anything to that bitch. And she'd be like, well, have you ever talked shit about anybody that did nothing to you? I mean, and I was like, well, yeah. She's like, that's your part. You are no better and no worse than these people. And so she helped me see myself as, she helped me get to right size, And so anyway, she took me through the steps. Step 9 was the most transformational step for me. Oh God, there's nothing like making amends to someone that you hate. There's nothing like it. It'll change your behavior, She said, like, I don't care if there's a nuclear bomb that went on across on their side of the street and you just have a leaf, you're gonna clean up that leaf. I don't care if they have a nuclear bomb. Ignore the nuclear bomb. Focus on the leaf. And so I would go to people who I thought really wronged me, and I would make amends for my leaf, The whole time thinking, where's my amends, fucker? Like, I was just like so pissed all the time, but I did it. I did the action, and it really transformed me. So I started thinking before I would speak. I would be like, I want to tell this guy to go fuck himself. Am I gonna own amends for that? And then I'd be like, yes. Do I wanna own amends to this asshole? No. Okay, I'm not gonna tell him to go fuck himself. I'm just gonna flip him off behind his back instead. Like, that was like growth for me. I remember calling my sponsor and being like, I didn't punch this guy. I wanted to punch this guy so bad. And I was like, I flipped him off behind his back. And she was like, congratulations. She was like, I mean, it's really kind of sad if that's like growth, but that was growth for me to be, I don't know, have some restraint. And so the ninth step really changed the way that I acted. It changed my behavior. And then I got to, step 11 was really interesting because my sponsor would ask me to pray, and I had this homeless guy who would sometimes sleep on my front porch, and I didn't live in the best neighborhood. And I would like look out my window to make sure he wasn't there. And I would like close my blinds and I would get on my knees and I would say, this is horse shit. And I'm talking to no one, but I'm gonna do this because my sponsor told me I need to pray. I mean, I took the contrary action and it helped me, And so I just kept doing that. I kept doing stuff that I didn't think was going to help, that I didn't want to help me necessarily. I didn't feel like I deserved a good life. And things started changing. And when I did my sex inventory with her, I remember she had me write out my ideal relationship. And I got specific. I was like, this guy has to like punk rock. He can't snore. He has to, he can't be too angry. Like, I'm pretty pissed off. If we're both angry, it's not going to be good. I mean, I wrote out what I wanted in a partner. And then, after my man ban was lifted, I, met my husband in AA and we got together. We were not the healthiest, I will admit. We were not the healthiest couple. And we have been together and getting healthy for like 27 years. That's pretty miraculous, Every day we are so committed to like every day we're just gonna try and be better. And we keep growing up together, and it's pretty rad. And he's not my higher power and he's not my hostage, which is pretty miraculous considering where I came from, He is a man that I respect and I feel like we're equals, and he has a program that he works and I have a program that I work and we keep those separate. He's not my sponsor in any fucking way, no way. And I'm not his. And we have respect for each other. And to come from where I come from the family that I, the parents, the stuff that I saw in my family, to be able to have a respectful conversation and say, I need to step away for a few minutes because I'm feeling triggered right now, is pretty miraculous, And we had a hard time for a long time. We have been through a lot of ups and downs, this man and I. I am so grateful that I get to learn how to be a better person every day because I have somebody in my life who reflects my character defaults. I don't call them character defects. I call them character defaults. They're things that save my life that are not serving me today. And so I'm really grateful that I get to work on those and see like, okay, why am I triggered by this? Oh, because when I was younger, I have P I had this thing that happened that gave me PTSD. And so I get to work on that. I've been in therapy for like 35 years or something, and most of my therapy has been around EMDR and trauma therapy, which has been really like hand in hand. The second that and my program, my sobriety, have been the things that have been the crux of how I'm here today. But when we were together for a while, we decided to try and after we were married for a year, we decided to try and get pregnant. And I was having a really hard time getting pregnant. And so it took us like 4.5 years, and we did IVF. We had one shot at IVF. We had only so much money. It was like $60,000 we put into this chance of getting pregnant, and they transferred two embryos, and I lost one, and then one stayed, and I ended up having a daughter. I can't believe it. I still can't believe I'm a parent, and I get to be a parent to her that is present and conscious and mindful of how I speak to her. I have a super great connection with my kid. I'm not her best friend by any means, but I am very connected with her, and she has the life that I didn't have, and super grateful for that. And I've talked for 53 minutes. I have a timer going. I'm so sorry. I just would say I can't believe that I have the life today that I have based on where I came from. And I owe it to AA and my therapists, all my therapists. So, if you're new here and you are wondering if you can do it, I'm just going to tell you, if I can do it, you can do it. I kicked and screamed and dragged my heels, and I still was able to stay sober. So, anyway, thank you for letting me share. I'm sorry that went on so long, and I hope you got something out of it. And thanks, Jan, and thanks, Patrick.